Recording in progress.
We're holding in syllabus on page 98. That's six lines from the top, middle voice, nun aleph. We were learning yesterday about the greatness and the fertility of Eretz Yisrael, and the last thing we learned was how Romy Bar Yechezkel got to see an actual example of Zavas Cholav Udvash, with the milk dripping from the goat's udders and mixing with the honey, the syrup dripping from the figs on the trees. So now the Gemara continues. Amar Rav Yaakov ben Dusari, Miloid L'Oino Gimel Milim. From the city of Lud to Oino, these are both cities in central Eretz Yisrael, in south central Eretz Yisrael, Gimel Milim, it's a 3 mil distance. Pamachas Kidamti Baneshef. One day I woke up early before Aloysa Shachar, and I was walking that distance. Baholachti at Karsilai Bidvash Shotainim, and I was walking up to my ankles in honey and then syrup from these figs. In other words, if it had been later in the day, he would have seen where he's going. He would have stayed out of it, but because it was dark, he couldn't see. But there was so much honey, so much juice dripping from these figs, that he was walking up to his ankles in it for that whole way. Again, showing about the fertility and the lusciousness of the fruits of Eretz Yisrael. Amar Reish Lakish, so Reish Lakish continues also in this vein about the Zavas Cholav Udvash of Eretz Yisrael. The Didi Chozi Li Zavas Cholav Udvash Shal Tziporti. I personally saw the area of Zavas Cholav Udvash in and around the city of Tziporti, in the north of Eretz Yisrael. V'avashitza milen ashitza milen. It was an area of 16 by 16 mil. A mil is a little over half a mile, so you're talking approximately an area 10 by 10 miles. A number of interesting points, various Mephoshim point out the significance of the number 16 in this connection. Bala Turin points out that it's 16 times where the Torah calls Eretz Yisrael Zavas Cholav Udvash. So corresponding to that is why you have the 16 times 16. Then you have others. The Maharal makes a point that a lot of times when we talk about a great amount of bracha, we associate it with the number 16 in the sense that an object usually has four sides, and four times four then represents an ultimate in greatness. So for all of those reasons and many more, there's 16 mil of it. Omer Rava Baba Chana, and then Rava Baba Chana continues, L'didi chozi li Zavas Cholav Udvash shall call Eretz Yisrael. I personally saw the areas of Zavas Cholav Udvash throughout the whole Eretz Yisrael. So Reish Lakish had seen it specifically around the city of Tziporti. Rava Baba Chana had traveled more extensively in Eretz Yisrael, and he saw it all together. The Havya, and the amount, when you add it all together in aggregate, to me, Bei Nifsi at Akla de Tobanki, it was the amount of space, as there would be, to describe it in terms that would be familiar to his audience in Bavel, is from between these two places, Bei Nifsi and Akla de Tobanki, or places in Bavel. Estrin Vatarta Parsi Urka, the length of it in total, if you were to add up all these areas together, would total 22 parsa. A parasa is 4 mil, so you're talking 88. You're talking 88 mil, so you're talking 60. You're talking 50, or so you're talking 50 some or 60 some miles. Or plus your sheet of parasa, and the width would be 6 parasa, which is approximately 15 miles. So proportionally, Tziporti has more than the rest of Eretz Yisrael. The Gemara mentions elsewhere, but in all of Eretz Yisrael, in the aggregate, you have altogether much more. Why these figures 22 and 6? So 22 is the number of letters of the Aleph Beis. So Maharal and Ben Yehoyada talk about it in terms of that. As far as the 6, the Maharal associates it with some of the Nekudas. He mentions 6 primary Nekudas, although it's a little hard to understand why he picked out for those 6. There are more than 6 primary Nekudas, but he considers that there were 6 fundamental ones, I guess. And Ben Yehoyada says it refers to the 6 Sidrei Mishnah. So in the S'chus of that, in the S'chus of the Jewish people learning Torah, and with the 22 letters of the Aleph Beis and these Nekudas or the Shisha Sidra Mishnah is why we're deserving to have the Zavas Cholav Udvash of Eretz Yisrael.
Yeah, together it's Koach.
Together it's Koach. That's also true, yeah. Okay.
A quick question. There's a Rashi where he talks about the place where there was a lot of fig honey I don't know exactly who.
Rashi mentions someplace based on Midrashim that I think in Ben Parshas Hazinu, that, yeah, even, for example, a person had a barrel full of dried figs, and he told his son to go and get some out, and then his son found that the barrel was full of honey, so even the dried figs were exuding a huge amount of syrup. Yeah, Rashi mentions it in Parshas Hazinu. I think he gets it from Sifri on the Pesukim over there. Okay. The Gemara continues. Rab Chelbo and Rab Avira and Rab Yosef Bachanina iklu lahu asra. These three chachamim, Rab Chelbo, Rab Avira, Rab Yosef Bachanina, one time visited a certain place in Eretz Yisrael. Aisu kamayu afarsika. They brought to them a peach to have a keilpus kfar hinoi, which was the size of the pans of the frying pans that they use in kfar hinoi. The ilpus kfar hinoi kamahava. How much does that amount to? What's the size of these pans? Chamesh se'in. It's an amount. It's equal to 5 saw. Which is very large for a peach. Ochlu shlish, they ate 1/3 of the fruit. The ifkiru shlish, they were mafkir 1/3 of it because like they didn't know what to do with it. The nosnu lefnei behemtan shlish, and they left 1/3 and gave it to their animals for food. Usually, by the way, you wouldn't take human food and use it for animals where you could have. But I guess the point is, in other words, that after having eaten, they couldn't eat anymore, and they couldn't find anybody else who would either after they were mafkir it. So they had no choice but to use the rest of it for animal food, so it doesn't go completely to waste. Then Lashana Iklo Rabbi Lozer Lahasem, the next year Rabbi Lozer visited the same place, and they also brought him some of the peaches that grew in that area, but they were so much smaller. Nakten Biyode, he was able to take one of them in his hand. So here we just said the previous one was 5 saw in size, which is a volume of a saw is a measure of volume, not weight, but still you're talking about something on the order of 15 pounds. Now it was like tiny compared to that, and he could hold it in his hand. But Omar, and he quoted on this connection, the pasuk, like it says in Tillim, Eretz Pri, the fruitful land, Lemuleicha, ends up becoming a salty land, which doesn't produce very much fruit, Meiras Yoshveba, because of the evil of the people who live there. So in other words, Rabbi Lazar is saying that because the people over here are not deserving of that bracha anymore, therefore they lost it, and therefore even in just 1 year, the fruit has shrunk to that extent. Now Marsha points out all of these Amoraim lived long after the Churban, so we're not even talking about before and after the Churban, but still within during that 1 year, apparently the what people had been doing in that area had gone so badly wrong that the tremendous bracha that there was before was taken away, and now all they have is normal sized food. Similarly, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi Iklo LeGavla. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi one time visited a place called Gavla in Eretz Yisrael. Chazanu lahanu katufi. He saw clusters of grapes. They were large, and they were standing there looking like calves, looking like baby cows. Omar, he thought from a distance, he thought they are actually calves. Omar, golem ben akfanim. Wait, there's calves standing among the grapevines. They're going to end up eating them all up. Omrulik Tufi Ninhu. So he told them it's not calves. It's the grapevines. They're so large that from a distance they look like calves. Omar, but Rabbi Shurban Levi says, Eretz, land, O land, Achnisi Peresayich, take back in your produce. Don't bother giving out so much tremendous amount. Lemiat Metzia Peresayich, who are you producing this fruit for? Is it for the sake of the Goyim who are standing up against us and ruling over us because of our Averis? Now, granted, Marsha says they may have been Kshirim, they may have even been, and they may have, the fact that we just said that the land becomes infertile because of the Averis of the people who live there. Here, the people who live there may well have been decent Goyim, but nonetheless, they're still Goyim, it's not their land, so Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi says, why should they deserve that tremendous bracha? Lashana Iklar of Chia Lahasam, the next year of Chia visited the same place, Chazanu Dahavokaime Ki'izi. He saw that the clusters of grapes were much smaller. Now they looked like goats, just smaller than calves. Omar, he also misunderstood what they are. Isn't Benang Fanim. Look at that, there were goats among the vines. Omrulay, the people told them, Zil, please go away. Don't do to us like what your colleague did, meaning they recognized that they had lost some of the fertility of their soil, and their grapevines are not as big and luscious as they were before because of what Rabbi Shimon ben Levi had said. Now they were concerned that Rabbi Lazar, that Rabbi Chiya, rather, is going to say the same thing, so they told him, they told him, please stay away from here. Okay, the Gemara continues. Tana Rabbanan, b'birchoseha shel Eretz Yisrael, when Eretz Yisrael is benefiting from the bracha of Hashem, beisa oisehei riboy kurin, then one single beisa, which is an area of 50 by 50 amos, so approximately 80 by 80 feet, oisehei riboy kurin, such a plot of land can produce 50,000 kurim, 50,000 kurim of grain. A kur is, again, a kur is a unit of volume, not really of weight, but if you translate it into weights, approximately, it comes out to approximately a quarter of a ton, about 500 pounds, give or take. So 50,000 of those, then you're talking well over 10,000 tons. So you can, one besa can produce that amount in Eretz Yisrael when it's enjoying Hashem's bracha. Eitz Yosef refers to Pnei Yeshua, who says, I mean, how is such a thing even possible? Because, as we learned yesterday, that you're going to have the stalks of wheat are going to grow tremendously tall, on top of like palm trees, and each one is going to produce huge grains of wheat the size of the kidneys of an ox. So once you consider all of that, then yes, you can in fact have that one besa would produce an enormous amount of grain like that. Vishivosa shot Soyan, on the other hand, when Soyan, which was the capital of Mitzrayim, was settled, when it was in its good times, Oysa Ayin Kurin, Besa Oysa Ayin Kurin, and one Besa over there could produce 70 Kur. So as much as Soyan, Mitzrayim was very fertile land, nevertheless, Eretz Yisrael has it beat by thousands of times more. How do we know that? The Tanya, Omer Reb Meir, because we find Reb Meir says, Ani ra'isi b'vikas beis shan, I saw in the valley of beis shan, beis saw oisa ayin kur, and that a beis saw could produce 70 kur of produce. Beis shan, Rashi points out, is part of other lands. It's not part of Eretz Yisrael. So therefore, if beis shan could produce that, then we should assume that Soyan, which is the capital of the superpower of Mitzrayim, could do the same thing. Marsha points out that actually Beis Shan is a city that's nowadays it's in Israel, and originally when they first conquered Eretz Yisrael, also it was part of the land that was divided up among the Shevatim. But what happened was, the Psukim describe Shevet Menashe failed, which was part of their territory. They failed to conquer it, and the Knanim continued to live there as one of the enclaves of Knanim in Eretz Yisrael. Eventually it got incorporated into Eretz Yisrael proper, but nevertheless, in the time of the second Beis Hamikdash, Jews by and large did not settle there. So there you have in Halacha, there are certain areas of Eretz Yisrael that are called that Ule Mitzrayim. The Jews, when they came out of Mitzrayim and entered Eretz Yisrael, conquered and divided up these areas, but Ole Bava, when they came to build the second Beis Hamikdash, they did not. And many such places, for certain purposes in Halacha, are not considered Eretz Yisrael, as far as Truma and Maestris and Shemitah and so forth. Beis Shan is in that category. Therefore, Beis Shan can be taken as an example of Chutz Laretz for that purpose, even though in principle it was supposed to be part of Eretz Yisrael. So if your mayor is seen, then the valley of Beis Shan, he saw that Beis Shan produces 70 kur, then we can assume that Soyan, the capital of Mitzrayim, is at least as good as that. Because let's consider, there's no land in that's as good and as fertile among all the other lands outside of Israel as Mitzrayim, because we find when the Torah wants to talk about the fertility of the cities in the area of Sodom, so it compares them to the garden of Hashem, to the land of Mitzrayim, because in other words, it wants to compare them to the best possible place, and they were saying that Eretz Mitzrayim is like that. So it's in Eretz Yisrael, actually. Sodom is actually part of Eretz Yisrael, and then we're comparing it to Eretz Mitzrayim. Now that's in Mitzrayim in general is very fertile. And then in turn, within Eretz Mitzrayim itself, there's no place more fertile and better than Soyan. We see that Soyan was where they would raise their kings. That was the capital city. And we can assume the capital city was placed in the port of Mitzrayim that was the best quality land. As we find a pasuk that refers to the ministers of the kings of the kings of the Jewish people are found in Soyan. Rashi explains it's Lignai. This is part of a nevuah criticizing them. You have throughout the time of the first Bais HaMikdash, you'll find over and over that the Jews are trying to make alliances with Mitzrayim and to trust in Mitzrayim that they're going to have their back when other Goyish nations attack, whether it was Aram, whether it was Asher, whether it was Babel, and then the Mitzrayim never stood up for them. Not much has changed in 3,000 years. So the pasuk describes how here these kings of Yisrael and of Yehuda are always sending their ministers to Tzoyan, which is the capital of Mitzrayim, to talk with the king of Mitzrayim over there, and they're not really accomplishing anything useful by it. So we see that Tzoyan was the capital. So if it was the capital, again, then we should assume it was the best and most fertile area. The Pashtus, we would assume, very simple, because, after all, the capital city needs more and better food than anywhere else. So if they want to have, and it's not like nowadays where it's easy to send trucks from one end of the country to the other, so it makes sense to assume that Soyan would be located in the best farming area so that they could have the best possible food and the most amount of food for the king and his, for the king and his entourage and his ministers and whatnot.
Is that the area that Lod is associated with in its Kodim
Chomesh? So Lod is associated with the cities of Sidon. Soyan was saying is the capital of Mitzrayim. So Soyan is mentioned here. You have it's mentioned in a pasuk in Yeshaya. We're going to quote in a second. It's mentioned in a pasuk in Chumash. It's not mentioned a lot because listen, how much does Tanakh anyway go into the geography of Mitzrayim? Not a whole lot, except where it has to do specifically with something else and with something involving us Jewish people. But yeah. So we're saying that Soyan was the capital. Historically, actually, Mitzrayim has a long, long history. The whole time from the first recorded kings of Mitzrayim until Mitzrayim ended up being part of other empires. The capital of it changed at different times. Sometimes it was in Soyan. Sometimes it was in Memphis. Sometimes it was this and that. But there were periods of time when it was in Soyan.
I think I'm mixing up some because I remember
the Zorash. You're thinking of Soyar. The fifth city of Meanwhile, the Enlachot Shroshim Bechola Eretz Yisrael Yosim Echevren. Meanwhile, there's no rockier soil and then poor quality soil in Eretz Yisrael more than Chevren. We see that they would use Hebron as a place to bury Mason. Abraham bought the Maris Machpelah over there. It was a place for burials because the land compared to other parts of Eretz Yisrael was not very good for cultivation. Elsewhere, the Gemara points out that it was good for raising animals. So they could get very good quality sheep there because there would be plenty of grass for them to feed on. But in terms of agriculture, not so much. Nevertheless, Chevron is seven times as fertile as Tzoyan. Mevuna literally means built up, but Rashi explains it's a lotion tree. It's a lotion of being fruitful. As the pasuk says, the Chevron sheva shanim nivnasa lifnei Tzoyan Mitzrayim. The pasuk says that the Chevron was built 7 years before Tzoyan in Mitzrayim. Now, what do we mean 7 years? My nivnasa, what do you mean built? Ilema nivnasa mamash, do you mean that literally Chevron as a city is 7 years older than Soyan? Well, how would that be? Efsha odam bona bias of no cotton, kodam shivna of no godol. Since when did a person build a house for his younger son before for his older son? Now, Knan and Mitzrayim are both children of Chom, but Mitzrayim is older. Shenemo of ne Chom, kusha Mitzrayim of Futuchnan. We would assume, in other words, the Gemara is assuming that Chom helped his children found their respective countries, meaning that he went and helped them build their cities. So in that case, the logic is that first he would be helping to build Mitzrayim for his older son, in particular Tzoyan, the capital, and later on he'd help build Chevron for his younger son, Knan. So therefore, it's not logical that Chevron would be a few years older than Tzoyan. Rather, we have to understand that it means that Chevron is built up and is fertile seven times more than Soyan. Meaning, in other words, we're taking the word shonim in the pasuk, which means years, and darshaning it as if it said shonim, that seven times. So it's seven times as great and as fertile as Soyan. Rashi on the Pasuk, by the way, this is a Pasuk from Parashat Shlach, Rashi mentions another angle on it that you often have. A person will build a place, and then afterwards he has leftover material, leftover construction material that he didn't need, and he goes and uses it for the next place. So here, what are you going to have? That he built Chevron, and then after that, so therefore the implication would be that first he built Chevron, and then what was left over, the not such good stuff that he ended up using for Chevron, he went and built Soyan with it. So again, the implication being that Chevron is more important and more desirable. So it may have literally been built first before Tsayan, but it also indicates that it's better quality. So far then, if we said that Soyan, if we can take Beis Shan then as an example of Chutz La'aretz and say that, and Beis Shan, by the way, is one of the more fertile areas in Eretz Yisrael, we're saying it's not part of Eretz Yisrael proper because it was part of the area of Eretz Mitzrayim but not Eretz Bavel. If we're saying that could produce 70 kur from one Beis Shan, and we're going to assume that the same thing is true of Soyan, then we're saying that Chevron is seven times that. So that brings us already to 490 kur. Now, Vahani Milibitzroshim, first of all, let's consider, we said that Chevron is rocky soil. Abel Shaloi Bitzroshim, so now when you're talking about other parts of Eretz Yisrael that are not so rocky, hey Mea, then you're gonna have, it's not gonna be only 490, you're gonna have to have a little, it's gonna be a little more, instead of 490, you're gonna have 500. You're gonna have an extra few percent. Mao Shaw points out, it comes out, you're adding 1/50th. You're going from 490, you're adding another 10 to get to 500, so you're adding 1/50th, representing the idea that often when we talk about an extra kedusha, an extra bracha, then we have 1 out of 50. Truma is approximately 1 out of 50 of the crop. Yovel is the 50th year. Shavuos is the 50th day, etc. So that would mean, in other words, the non-rocky areas of Eretz Yisrael are going to be producing, in normal times, at least 500 kur per besa, based on the calculation so far. And all that's talking about when it's not enjoying a special bracha. But now consider what happens when Eretz Yisrael enjoys a special bracha. We find by Yitzchak, by Yisrael, Yitzchak ba'aretzahi, Yitzchak planted in that land when he was living among the Plishtim, by Yimtza b'shanayhi me'asharim, and in that year he found 100 times as much as he would have expected. As it actually says on the pasuk, he made an estimate in order to figure out how much ma'isir he needs to give, and it turned out to be 100 times as much. So therefore, from 500 kur per beis sah, we get to 50,000. So therefore, that's how we get the original figure that we said, that in Eretz Yisrael, when it's enjoying brachas, then it's going to have 50,000 kur to one beis sah. So hundreds of times more than even Soyan, than even the most fertile area of Egypt, representing the best of Chutz La'aretz. Maharsha points out, what you really have, in other words, in effect, is you're saying, when Hashem gives a bracha, that he's giving you, so we're saying he's giving you 100 times as much. Meaning, in other words, like this, you have aser to aser. Hashem expects you to give maaser. Hashem is saying, if you do, then I'll be willing to make do, so to speak, with only 1/100th of what you're gonna get, and you can have 99 times as much for yourself. As opposed to, you have the famous story of the farmer who left his son a field that produced 1,000 kur per year, and he tells him, be careful with maaser, and the son starts getting careless with maaser, and over the years, the field is producing less and less until it's producing only 1/10 as much as before, and his friends come and tell him, hey, now you're the kohen, and Hashem has taken over as the landlord, so therefore, so Maharsha is saying, no, here in the Gemara, we're saying the other way around. When we're enjoying Hashem's brachas, then Hashem is saying, you can be the landlord. You can have the 99%. I need only 1% for myself. So that's where we get these figures. Maharam Shif, by the way, points out, how do we know, you know, given all this calculation the Gemara had done, why don't we say maybe the other way around? Maybe the 500 kur per beis sah is when the land is enjoying Hashem's brachas. Maybe when it's not, then we would say that it's only 1/100th of that. And he says, because then you're going to have so little per beis sah, you can't really call that certainly wouldn't be a greatness of Eretz Yisrael compared to any place else. So we have to say that's what we're talking about, that in normal, to that even in regular, not specifically bench to times, it'll be 500 or 490 in Chevron, 500 anywhere else in Eretz Yisrael, and then 100 times as much when there are brachas. Okay. So the Gemara continues, Tanya, Omer of Yossi, saw the Yehuda. When you had one saw of grain in Yehuda, in the south part of Eretz Yisrael, you could get the following from it. Hoysa oysa heysim, you would actually, when you turned it into flour, you would end up with 5 saw of flour. Ben Yehoyada explains, in other words, the flour was so good quality that when you'd knead it when you mix it with water, it would absorb a huge amount of water and therefore it would become much more in volume. how does the five saw break down? Saw kemach. You would have a saw of flour. Now, flour, Rashi describes what we mean is like this. When you're grinding grain, So the procedure is like this. Grains of wheat come with various shells on top of them, which some of them you remove in the threshing and the winnowing and whatever, and then you end up with one shell that's fairly tightly attached to the grain of wheat, which is called the bran. And then in English it's called bran, in Hebrew it's called subin. So then what you do is you wash the grain or you do whatever with it in order to remove that, and then you grind it up, and you get two qualities of you get a few different qualities of flour once you sift it. You have a coarser kind of flour, which is called in Hebrew soilus. When we talk about, for example, the korbanos mincha are made of soilus, it's not we often translate soilus as fine flour, but actually it doesn't mean fine as in powdery stuff. That's not such good quality, actually. The good quality stuff is coarser, kind of like the like you have in this. You can go in the store and you can buy a grade of flour called semolina, so it's similar to that. So that will be soilus. Then you have the powdery stuff, which is called kemach. Then you have the bran. Then you have also the wheat germ, which is called mursan. And then you have what's left is basically what you can make pumpernickel bread out of. So Rabbi Yossi is saying you get all five. Saw kemach, you have a saw of powdery flour, saw soilus, a saw of the good quality flour, the semolina grade stuff. Saw subin, you have a saw of bran, saw mursan, another saw of the wheat germ. Usaw kiburis, and then you have one saw of the type of flour that you can make pumpernickel or black bread out of. So from the one saw of grain, you got all of that because like it swells up so much as you're processing it and then preparing it. The Gemara continues. A certain min says to Rav Chanina, you want to know about the fertility of Eretz Yisrael. You should know. You have good reason to be praising your land of Eretz Yisrael. My father left me a Yerusha in Eretz Yisrael of one single base saw, which again, we've been talking about. A base saw is an area of approximately 80 by 80 feet. Mimena meshach, from it I'm able to get oil. There's enough room there to grow olives, and I have oil for my family. Mimena chamar, there's room in there also to plant grapes and to have wine. Mimena ivor, from there I can get grain. Mimena kitnius, from there also I'm able to plant and get beans or peas or things like that. Mimena royas miknosi, and there's even room in that base saw for my animals to graze. So, again, one tiny little plot of land, and this min is saying that it's able to produce so much and so much of a variety of different kinds of crops. Maybe one point why we're mentioning the point that the seller was a min is because a regular yid might not be able to do that in one base saw because you have issues of planting things too close together. You have issues of kalayim, but he being a min doesn't care about that kind of thing. Okay, another example. Amaleahu bar emira lebar arad Yisrael. There was a goy and a Modi when the Jewish people first crossed the Yarden and came into Eretz Yisrael. So this a Modi, one of the locals, says to a yid, "Hi Tulsa, whatever, to kaima aguda de Yarden. This particular palm tree, which is located here by the banks of the Yarden." Hama gazritu gadritu mina. Had you Jews, now that you've taken over our land, then how much are you harvesting from this tree? Omale shitin kuri. So the yid answers 60 kur. A kur, like we just said before, is a unit of volume equaling, and then in weight it would come out to somewhere around a quarter of a ton, around 500 pounds, give or take. So the yid is saying that we're getting something like 15 tons of dates just from the one tree. Omalei, so the Amurdi says, Akati lemai ilituba, look at this, you've barely come into our land and taken it over, achriv tua, and you've already wounded it, you've already destroyed it. Anan kufchof kuri habagazrinimina. The same palm tree, when we Amurim were in control of the land over here, we would get 120 kuri from this tree. So what is it now? You Jews have taken over and it's only half as good as it was before? Omalei, so the yid answers, Anonami mechad gisa kaminalach. You're right, and when I said 60 kor, I meant only from one side of the tree. You're right, if you count the whole tree, it's also 120 kor. We're getting as much from it as you were in your time. By the way, we were saying before that Eretz Yisrael really has its brachas when the people over there deserve it. The Amorim obviously didn't deserve it because that's why the Eretz kicked them out of the land. But nevertheless, the obvious part of it is that the Eretz is preparing, like our various psukim, that explain that Hashem is preparing Eretz Yisrael as a very well-cultivated and fertile and well-developed land for the Yidden to be able to take over.
Seems like this guy is a serious guy. He wasn't afraid to answer.
I guess so, yeah. I guess the Amori wasn't afraid to sew it up with the Yid either, even though he knows there's a mitzvah of Loisachaya called the Shaman, you know, to keep any of the Amorim alive. But yeah. An interesting point in this connection, by the way, since we're talking about this whole point about the fertility of Eretz Yisrael and how primarily that bracha is when oisin ritzono shel makom, when we're acting the way the Eibishter wants. The Bach mentions an interesting point on that in the nusach of the bracha main shalish. We say that we want to be able to lechel mepiria of this boya mituva. We want to be able to eat of the fruit of Eretz Yisrael and enjoy of its goodness. So he says lechel mepiria means the actual fruit. This boya mituva means to be able to enjoy, to be satisfied from the goodness from the kedusha of Eretz Yisrael that comes out in this fruit. The Gemara continues. Amar Rav Chista, my dichtiv. What does it mean? It says in a pasuk, "Va'etan loch eretz chemda." Hashem says, "I gave to you Jewish people a desirable land, a nachas tzvi, the heritage of the tzvi." Now, in the simple sense, tzvi means also is another word for desire. So it means a desirable land, the desirable heritage. But then in that case, it would be repetitious from eretz chemda. So therefore, so we understand rather the word tzvi. The Gemara is darshaning tzvi as in like a deer. Lama nimshal Eretz Yisrael tzvi. Why is Eretz Yisrael being compared to a deer? Loi malach, it tells you, ma tzvi ze en ode machzik besarei. Just like a deer, its skin cannot really fit its flesh. The skin of a deer, when the animal is alive, the skin covers its whole body, of course. But then when you take the skin off, then the skin shrinks. And then afterwards, if you try to stretch it to recover the body of the deer, you won't be able to. So af Eretz Yisrael, enemach zekas peresah, the same way Eretz Yisrael produces so much produce, there's no room in the whole Eretz Yisrael for all that produce. Year after year, it's producing huge amounts, as we've been saying in this whole sugya, and eventually you run out of space to hold it all. Elsewhere, the Gemara makes another point of it as well. It means also that Eretz Yisrael, the Gemara mentions in Gittin, when the Jewish people are living in Eretz Yisrael, then it expands and there's more room for people to live there. When the Jews are not living in Eretz Yisrael, then it shrinks and there's no physical room, the Gemara mentions in Gittin. The Maharal makes a point about this. He discusses our Gemara at length and explains that the point the Gemara wants to make over here is that Eretz Yisrael, as much as it's a Gashmiistic place, it's also to a certain extent it's beyond the limitations of Gashmias. You would never say, how could you have the Gashmias that a land can shrink and expand? Nevertheless, we're saying that's how it is. Another way of looking at it is, just like the deer is the fastest and the fleetest of all the animals, the same way Eretz Yisrael is the fastest to ripen its produce, because again, the climate there is so good that the produce ripens over there faster than anywhere else, like the way the deer runs faster than any other creature. Well, then you're going to think, well, maybe if we're comparing Eretz Yisrael to a deer is taka, a very fast animal, but its meat is very lean, precisely because it runs so much, so there's not much room on its body for fat, and it needs to be mostly muscle. So you would think maybe the fruit of Eretz Yisrael is the same way. Sure, it ripens very fast, but there's not much of a fatness and a deliciousness to it. Therefore, the Torah describes Eretz Yisrael many times. Like we said before, Bala Torah points out there's no less than 16 times in Chumash alone that Eretz Yisrael is described as an Eretz Zovas Cholav Adash, meaning Shmeinim Mecholav, the fruit of Eretz Yisrael, is fatter than milk, and Masukim Midvash, and sweeter than honey. So before we said that Rami Bar Chezkel got to, and various other Amiroyim got to see the actual Zovas Cholav Advash, literally milk and honey flowing on the ground, but now we're saying, what are we comparing Eretz Yisrael? What do we mean flowing with milk? Milk doesn't grow from the ground or from trees or whatever. So what it means is the fruit is fattier and juicier than milk is, and then it's sweeter than honey. So therefore, so it's both. It matures fast, and it's also sweet and then delicious.
The fruits are not, and the And then milk and wine.
No, so what we're saying is, in other words, that when it says Zavas Kol Avadash, means the fruits, not only do the fruits of Eretz Yisrael mature very fast, which is why we're comparing Eretz Yisrael to a fast-running deer, but they're also very fatty and delicious and delectable, like milk and like honey.
What's the question then?
What? That we would have thought. Ain't perasashmeni. Maybe the fruit matures very fast, but it doesn't have much of a fat and a flavor, if you understand. And we're saying Tamad Laimayim. So now he brings in, the Ein Yaakov brings in over here a relevant piece from a Gemara in Bava Basra. The context in Bava Basra is that it's talking, in that part of Bava Basra, it's talking about where Chosin brings gifts to his Kala before the wedding, and you have Dinim over there. What happens if for one reason or another the wedding doesn't end up going through? What do we do as far as, do they have to reimburse these things? And there's various Dinim in that connection. So the Gemara brings, Amar of Yehuda Amarab, Maisa Ba'odim Echad, it happened a certain person, a Chosin, Sheshigu Leves Chomiv, he sent to his Shver's house before, in the time before, between the Kiddushin and the Nisuin, he sent Yayin Chodosh, new wine, the Shem and chodesh, a newly pressed oil, or clay pishdan chodesh, and new linen clothing, ba'atzeres, and all this was Shavuos time. So the Gemara says, "My kamash malon, what's the point of mentioning all these gifts?" And then that it was Shavuos time. The answer is Chashivus of Eretz Yisrael kamash malon. Also, that Vraisa wants to tell us how wonderful Eretz Yisrael is. That even Shavuos time, you wouldn't expect. Normally, these kinds of things wouldn't yet be ready. Shavuos time, the grape harvest season, for example, is usually Elul Tishrei time. The wine pressing season is also not necessarily then in the spring. So, nevertheless, here it was before Atzeres, it was before Shavuos time, and already all these things were ready and freshly pressed, again showing how fast the crops ripen in Eretz Yisrael. Continuing on the topic of the importance of being in Eretz Yisrael and the schus of it, actually, I guess, yeah, we'll leave this for next time, that's the gem.
Why new wine? It was just old wine.
Because yeah, it's new. It was newly pressed. Because listen, if it's old wine, then there's no chiddush. Of course, you could have old wine. Of course, you could have old wine anytime.
Stuff, fine. The stuff.
Understood. But the point is over here to tell us that the crops, that the grapes had ripened so much earlier in the year than you would expect them to. That already Shavuos time, he was able to have juice from it. Where b'derech klal, that time of year, you usually wouldn't have such a thing. If you're going to have wine, yes, necessarily it's going to be old wine from previous use crops, yeah. Yom Yom Mashiach HaGola, Al Rosh Chodesh Shvat, Al Shvat, we know that this is the day that Moshe began explaining the Torah to the Jewish people, Be'er as a Torah, Hoyo Moshe Be'er as a Torah Azorit, and he explained it in 70 languages. So the Rebbe explains that this point that Moshe explained the Torah, B'Shivim Loshen, is very relevant for our Avoda, because each of us has a spark of Moshe Rabbeinu within us. And Rosh Chodesh Shvat, the Eibishter gives each person in his avoda a special power to spread Torah and Yiddishkeit in all the various languages out there, B'Shivim Loshen. That means, first of all, when you're talking about teaching Jews who have to be taught in other languages, such as English, because they're not as conversant in Lashon Kodesh, and then you have Lahavdor when it comes to being Mashpia on the Umas Olam, about the Shev Mitzvah Nenoyach, where we have the ability, a special Mesinas Koyach given on this day, that we have the ability to explain it to them in English and French and Russian and all the other various languages of the world, and be poil on them to take these things on and make the world, and make the world more ready for the Sakhan Olam Machos Shindal Adyud. Okay, we started learning yesterday about the dinim when a person is not feeling well on Shabbos. We said the basic general rule is in that case, if it's not chola shiyash b'sakana, then you're not allowed to take medicine for it. Now, on the other hand, then you have certain kinds of foods and drinks that healthy people eat as well. So such things, you're allowed to eat and drink them for refuah, even though maybe they do have side effects, and it becomes a little bit obvious that the person is eating them for refuah. Nevertheless, it's mutter, because at least it is something that is eaten by healthy people. On the other hand, when you have something that's not something that healthy people eat, then you wouldn't be allowed to eat it for refuah. So now, let's say if a person has a sore throat, for example, then he can't take medicine for it. But say, for example, let's say a person wants to...
Somebody has
So what happens, let's say, for example, a person wants to improve their voice. You know, chazanim, for example, sometimes will swallow, or people in a choir or whatever will swallow a raw egg in order to smooth out their throat and make their voice and make their voice nicer. So that or certain kinds of sugary drinks and then syrups and things like that, those kinds of things you're allowed to do on Shabbos because there's nothing wrong with you. It's not that your throat is sore and you're doing it in order to soothe the soreness. Rather, you're doing it in order to improve your voice. So certain, and you're not miskaven the refuah, so such a thing would be mutter on Shabbos.
How is that conceivable? Something that is painful, you have to endure on Shabbos, and something that is just natural.
So if it's a minor pain, then yes, you have to endure it on Shabbos because you have a gzeira of the chachamim that we don't want. They didn't want you to grind up spices and make medicines, and therefore the chachamim barred certain kinds of medicines on Shabbos. I'll give you an example, by the way. The Gemara in Shabbos mentions that one time Reb Meir was having a terrible stomach ache, and they wanted to give him a refuah that involved I think a concoction of wine and oil or something which was supposed to be good for a stomach ache, and he refused to have them do it for me. Now he himself held that such a thing as mutter on Shabbos, but he knew the other chachamim said it's also. So he said, fine, I'll deal with the stomach ache throughout Shabbos rather than being over on what the other chachamim say, even though he would have even been entitled to follow his own shitta in this regard. So yeah, that's how it is. To a certain extent, you're expected to Shabbos is Shabbos, and if that means putting up with a little discomfort, so be it.
So when people take regulating drugs, regulating.
So it's different, for example, if a person is taking a medicine every day. A person is taking antibiotics and they have to take it every day. And it comes out on Shabbos, fine. They've been taking it
temporarily. Yeah. 1 week. What if somebody has for months, he has to take meds?
So once you have, when there's a regular schedule of it and he has to take it every day, then that's different. We're going to talk about that later on. We're talking about here where it's a one-off thing. One Shabbos, he has a toothache. One Shabbos, he has an earache or something like that. Then we're talking about that he can't.
But that came at the before and on Shabbos for him to be avoiding the medicines like Tylenol and stuff.
Yeah.
Like that.
So there are things that you can do on Shabbos that are non-medical. You can put some ice on it, for example, but you can't do certain things that the Chachamim figured are too close to grinding spice. For making medicines that you can't do, yeah.